advised.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome. It's 11 o'clock Eastern Time. It's Wednesday, December 9th, 2020. And thank you for joining us for the 98th episode of the Rock and Roll Shrink Radio Show here on Blog Talk Radio. Special thanks to our host, NDB Media. I'm Casey Shapiro, and with me tonight is Dr. Stephen Mathis, a.k.a. the Rock and Roll Shrink. We'll be taking calls from our listeners all evening during the show at 914-338-0314. You can also follow along in our live chat room on blogtalkradio.com as the show is happening. Before we begin, a couple quick disclaimers. This show does not constitute a doctor-client relationship, nor legal or medical representation of any kind. Also, the views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Mathis and Ms. Shapiro, and are not an official stance on behalf of the psychological community or its peer vetting or regulatory bodies. And now, a topic-relevant bit of music played by Dr. Mathis himself. Take it away, Doc. As always, thank you very much for that. And if you would please let us know the name of the song and the artist and its relevance to tonight's topic.
Well, as not that's become atypical anymore, but that was yet another shameless self-promotion. That's one of my songs called A Song for All My Friends. And it's sort of my thank you to the group of friends that I've had over the years who've been very supportive of my music and my professional career. And that was kind of my tribute to them that I wrote many, many years ago that I performed many times. So I thought, given that we're doing part two, the saga continues, of thankfulness, I thought that would be kind of a cool thing to do since it was my thank you to my friends.
Well, thank you for being a friend. So, as Dr. Mathis mentions, tonight's episode is entitled Thankfulness. This is part two of two. Since last time we did run over, we will discuss in a moment. So before we begin, let's first go to the Rock and Roll Shrink Recalls, a moment of rock music trivia stories as recounted by Dr. Mathis, if you would, sir.
Okay. So tonight I have a deep cut, which I thought would be kind of cool. So tonight I'm going to be talking about someone that most of us don't know, although this person was well known back in the day. and is probably more familiar to some of our listeners who are into the gospel genre. So the person about whom I'm speaking, name is Sister Rosetta Tharpe, who was a African-American female guitarist, vocalist, and songwriter and recording person who lived back, I think she was born in 1915 and passed in 73. And she was one of the first people to start out in gospel and then sort of merge gospel with kind of the rhythmic accompaniment of rock and roll, and became a huge influence on a number of musicians that were going to follow her, including people like Carl Perkins, Johnny Cash, Elvis Presley, Jerry Lee Lewis, Chuck Berry, and Little Richard. So she typically, played guitar, but was one of the first folks to really employ a lot of distortion, and kind of was sort of almost a blues, electric blues, gospel, rock and roll kind of thing. She had a really big influence in the 60s. She did a tour with Muddy Waters in England, I think in 64. And her performance was witnessed at the time and had an impact on people like Keith Richards, Jeff Beck, and Eric Clapton. So she was one of the first people to cross over into the rock and roll and blend the rock and roll with the gospel stuff, which she got a lot of flack from a lot of the gospel, the more conservative gospel folks, because she actually started playing in the church. She, her father was a vocalist, and her mother was also a vocalist and a mandolin player, but she was also a missionary and a deaconess and a member of the Church of God in Christ, which I think was founded in the late 1800s by Charles Manson, and not the same Charles Manson that most people think of when they hear that name.
I was about to ask you about that.
No. Now, this was that listless guy got a good bleaching, because Charles Manson was a black Pentecostal bishop. But he did encourage rhythmic musical expression and dancing in the praise and services, which, you know, the other Charles Manson was also a musician, so there's a lot of do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do going on here. She started playing guitar, I think, at age 4, and proved to be pretty much a musical prodigy. And she would play along with her mother, and they would do this kind of traveling evangelical kind of thing, and which she would sing and play with her mom. And they eventually, I think in the mid-1920s, relocated to Chicago. They're originally from, I think, Arkansas, and relocated to Chicago because there was a lot of concerts there at the Church of God in Christ Temple there. I think it was the Roberts Temple. And so she did a lot of, you know, stuff to do a lot of church conventions, and started playing out, and then she started playing in clubs, which again got her kind of like the stink eye from some of the parishioners. She got married originally to Thomas Tharpe, who was a minister, and then accompanied her and her mother on a lot of their tours. That marriage didn't last very long, but she held on to the name, and they ended up, that's how she ended up with the name Sister Rosetta Tharpe. So she just kept on playing in spite of all that. And she started performing and caught the attention of a lot of jazz and blues guys. So at 23, she recorded, I think, for Decca Records, and was backed by a jazz orchestra, which again was very, very unusual for a female gospel singer, and particularly a female black gospel singer. And a lot of times when she would perform, she in the early stage, she would play on stage with the Jordanaires. Now, I don't know if our listeners know who the Jordanaires are, but they are a very famous Grand Ole Opry white gospel group. So you can imagine back in the day, here's this very spunky, very energetic black female gospel, blues, rock and roll kind of chick out there, duper guitarist, playing her thing, rocking away with this white quartet of white guys from the Grand Ole Opry behind her. So you can imagine, I mean, that took a lot of guts, I'm telling you. But she did a lot of appearances at the Cotton Club and at the Apollo. She did appearances with the Cab Calloway and also did a lot of guitar kind of battles at the Apollo. And a lot of the guys that were playing there, because you know, back in the day, and still rock and roll is predominantly a male-dominated field, even though certainly since the 70s, females have come in and made great strides with, you know, folks like Hart and Quarterflash and Joan Jett and that sort of thing. But back in the day, that was like, what the hell? And a lot of guys would go, oh, my God, giving her a compliment. Hey, this gal plays like a man. And she was once quoted as saying, ain't no man can play like me, which I thought was great. So she continued to play and eventually kind of got out of favor with the very conservative gospel group. And so she tried to kind of come back and get more into gospel stuff, but her record deals and contracts were all, you know, about playing more jazz and blues clubs. So she was, you know, required to still do a bunch of rock and roll stuff, which she did, but always hailed back to her gospel roots and just, you know, would mix the gospel with the boogie-woogie piano player and sometimes backed up by the Jordanaires and sometimes with the jazz band. So she picked up a keyboardist at one point. She also performed at a Mahalia Jackson concert, by the way, who was at the time one of her biggest rivals in terms of vocals. So she was playing with this group of folks and eventually picked up this was playing a concert where this female piano player was playing and really, really, really loved her type of piano playing. And so she recruited her into the band, so to speak, and she became her pianist for a long time. And it was rumored, and I have no way of knowing this, but you know, a lot of the people that I have read about at the time, you know, swears that she and the female keyboardist were involved, which would have been really, really taboo back in the day. And in spite of that, she eventually ended up two more marriages, married a second time. That didn't last very long, and then married a third time. And I'm not sure if she was still playing with the female piano player at the time or not, but it was rumored that she had this relationship with this gal. And, you know, one of the authors of something claims that he had interviewed somebody who had walked in on her in bed with two other females at some point. But, you know, that's neither here nor there in the sense. But I think what it does do lends more credence, if you will, to the fact that this gal was very, very, she's very rock and roll-y. You know, she did her thing. She, you know, got out on stage and played and it was very, very energetic and very vibrant. And a lot of, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of these folks, famous musicians, have cited her as a huge, huge influence, including, as I mentioned, Johnny Cash and Little Richard and Chuck Berry and Elvis Presley, but also Isaac Hayes and Jerry Lee Lewis and Aretha Franklin have all said that this gal had major, major impacts on them, as did Tina Turner. In fact, Tina Turner cites Tharp and Mahalia Jackson as two of her earliest musical influences. But even people like Karen Carpenter and Neil Sedaka and Meatloaf have said, hey, this gal had a major influence on me. And if you've ever heard her play and sing, and I think you can probably get on YouTube and see some old videos of her. All her discography got burned up in the Universal Fire in 2008, so a lot, along with a bunch of other artists. So her material was all destroyed back in the day. But you can probably hear a bunch of it. My guess is if you Googled her on like YouTube, you could probably get some videos and or audio of her. But if you haven't seen her play or heard her, I mean, she's a really good guitarist. I mean, really good guitarist. And you see this gal just doing her thing, and you're like, holy shit, this is awesome. Anyway, she was out playing and had a stroke in 1970. I think she had put on a lot of weight. She had diabetes. developed diabetes in a later life and had put on some weight and had a stroke in 1970. And I think had one of her legs amputated as a result of the complications from the stroke and diabetes. And then a couple of years later, she was on the eve of a recording session and she had another stroke and died in Philadelphia. So they have since raised money and erected like a little honorarium in her honor and raised money to put a headstone on her grave because there was no marker on her grave, which is very common for a lot of these old school performers. But if you get a chance, go and Google her, because if you haven't seen her, she is really she's really cool. And she, most of the videos that I have seen of her in the past, she's playing either a Les Paul or a Gibson Les Paul or Gibson SG or a 335 type semi-hollow type guitar. But most of the videos I've seen with her have been on the Les Paul or the SG, and irrespective of that, she's a really, really hot rock and roll type guitar player. And he just kind of like, holy shit, girl. And she was like doing it. I was like, and you could clearly see where people like Chuck Berry, who basically said his entire career was an imitation of Miss the Harp, which I thought was hilarious. And you could clearly hear her influences in his guitar playing. I mean, it is like unmistakable. So for those of you who haven't familiarized with yourself with Sister Rosetta Tharpe, go check her out. She's been called by a lot of people the quote-unquote original soul sister and the godmother of rock and roll. And I would don't know about the first one, but the second one definitely fits. Definitely. And also mixed in with a lot of the gospel. So I mean, you can hear the gospel influence in her voice, but she's got a great range, and she's really good. I mean, that's all I can say about her. She's a really powerhouse, and to think of the era that she did, both for African-American performers and being a female performer, that's like, you know, amazing stuff. So, woo-hoo to her, and sorry she's not still around, and sorry we don't have her stuff. But, I should mention, she, in 2007, she was elected to the Blues Hall of Fame, and in 2017, she was inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So,
oh, good.
So there you go.
Excellent. All right. Well, thank you very much for that. All right. She definitely sounds amazing, and I'm not that familiar, but after those stories, I definitely will want to go check her out. And it's a shame about that fire. I always hate when those things happen because you try to hang on to the kind of legacy. And, you know, once in a while, you got to kind of have backups of your backups these days, I guess.
Well, I mean, I know of her because, you know, for induction in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And when they initially, you know, put her in there, I thought, who the hell is that? You know, and I started doing research on it. And I'm like, holy moly, have I missed the boat on this one? So, you know, you're never too old to learn, and you're never too nerdy to miss something. So, you know, I was behind the bus and missed the boat like a lot of people, I'm sure, in regards to her. But once I figured out, like, I need to check this chick out, and I started going back and, you know, checking out some of her archives on some of her stuff, I was like, holy moly. And then I was going to try to see if I get some of her recordings. I'm like, oh, bummer. So, yeah.
All righty. Well, thank you very much for that. It's definitely interesting as always. And those of you who are listening, again, we will take calls from our listeners and questions in the online chat room throughout the rest of the evening until around midnight. So please feel free to give us a call. Again, the number is 914-338-0314. All righty. Thankfulness, and this is part two of two. So it has been a tradition since our show started back in 2016 to do a special episode or two that are of special interest to our listeners during the winter holiday season. There's several holidays, but they all kind of evoke similar emotional baggage and things for people. So we like to address that. This time of year can be very special. I know I said special a lot, but sorry, I'm being lazy this week. For many of the same reasons, for some people, it can also be, or instead of being special for some, be painful or hard to handle in some way, especially, you know, you have reunions with people you don't normally deal with, and you go home or you go somewhere you don't normally hang out, kind of depending on your situation. This is a topic that we've looked at from several angles. So here are some of our past episodes. You can also find these on the master list on our Facebook page. Episode 9, way back in the day, was our first one, Holiday Depression. That was a three-parter, and we started off with that on November of 2016. And then later on, episode 33, Mindfulness, there was some talk about this. That was November 2017. Episode 35, not long after, The Grand Illusion, in December 2017. That was talking about the myth of, quote, perfect holidays, because a lot of us get wound up because we are pressured by social media and pushy relatives to have everything be just so, and it almost never is just so. So you got to kind of, if you can't celebrate with the one you love, you got to celebrate the one you have. So episode 56 is the psychology of holidays. You know, why do we do this? Why does this matter to us? And that was November 2018. And then the next one right after was about setting boundaries on holidays, which is a huge thing for a lot of people, also November 2018. And then last holiday season, episode 80, we did Who Says You Can't Go Home? And that was about toxic family holidays, and that was November 2019. So this year, we want to take a look at thankfulness, but going beyond the typical Hallmark card and T-shirt slogan pop culture take on the topic. So last time, 2 weeks ago, episode 97 in November, we ran over time. So the episode on thankfulness is split into two parts. This has happened to us quite a bit lately because we have a lot we want to tell you guys and we don't really want to trim too much out. So last time we discussed an overview of thankfulness and we got about halfway through the psychology of thankfulness. So then we had to pause. So tonight we will discuss the remainder of the psychology of thankfulness, and then difficulties with thankfulness and resources to foster thankfulness. And before we get started, I'm going to check in with Dr. Mathis and see if there's anything that you want to get on the table before we get going.
No, let's hit it.
All righty. Boom. Okay, so section one we did. Section two I trimmed up. So we're going to go back down to where we were talking. If you guys remember, I had done an informal poll in social media where I put certain questions to the hive mind, and then I collected up the answers, and I was reading them anonymously to you guys. And as a caveat, which I had, it was in the section I trimmed out, so I'll remind you again, some of the parts, when I'm doing opinions, these are opinions of lay people, and these are not necessarily people that have mental health expertise of any sort. They haven't done research, anything like that. They're talking about their opinions and experiences. So please differentiate between that and my layperson's research and Dr. Mathis's professional opinions on things. Okay, so we last left off at an opinion section, and that question was, what value is there in acknowledging the things for which you are thankful? This was a really key question. This was one of the first ones that I asked people. So the first opinion I got was, I value the communal thanks and gratefulness expressed with Thanksgiving. Now, I had asked these questions before Thanksgiving, but the answers will apply afterwards into the rest of the holiday season, so I didn't trim anything out that way. The next opinion that I got was, you can offer your appreciation to those who have given you good things, parenthetically, thereby engendering good feelings in them, as well as nurturing your relationships with them. And most importantly, you can generate a profound sense of well-being in yourself by filling your mind and heart with all the things that have gone right in your life. It's a great way to foil the brain's negativity bias that makes us see nothing but the painful and disappointing. Next answer. It directs your focus, however temporarily, in a positive direction. People who, generally speaking, focus more on the negative or things they don't have are less likely to find true contentment, satisfaction, and, dare I say, happiness in their lives. Parenthetically, this does not include people who are suffering from a trauma or traumatic loss. I'm speaking of people who just tend to focus on the negative as a matter of course. Next answer. When we take time to focus on the positive, we put ourselves in a position to create more positive in our lives. It also helps keep the negative in perspective so that it doesn't become overwhelming. Next answer. For me, that is exactly the practice, acknowledging that no matter what else is going on around me, there are these things that are good, and I would be worse off without them. And the last answer was, human beings literally must manufacture our happiness and positivity. Parenthetically, I can find the research, meaning the person had actual links backing this up and has a bit of mental health coaching experience. So they were prepared to back it up, but I didn't ask them for documentation because this is opinions. And they continue. It doesn't just happen. So cognitively, we must find and invent, if necessary, things for which we are thankful. And after I do these opinion things, I'm going to stop and check in with Dr. Mathis after each one. So at this point, I'm going to check in and see if you have anything that you want to add before we go to section three.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, I honestly don't think any of us have to invent anything, because I think all of us can find, if we look closely enough, we can find things to be thankful for. It's much easier as humans, I think, to focus on the bad stuff and the negative stuff and, you know, get involved in the why me syndrome and the victim mode. But all that does is generate more depression, anxiety, and negativity in your life, and you don't want to generate that kind of stuff. So I would very much agree that if you put yourself in a much better mind space to be positive, you'll also find yourself more motivated to get off your assets and do things and get yourself out of the slump, because nobody who's depressed or uber anxious generally feels like, you know, that it's an energy zapper. So if you're much more focused on, wait a minute, I have this on my side, I have this to be thankful for, I have this going for me, it's much more of a motivator to get off your butt and do something about the stuff that isn't right in your life.
Okay. I do have a thought on what you said, and it may be just because I can read the words that are in front of me, but in the last comment where they said manufacture happiness, I took the comment to mean more that if there are some people who don't prioritize realizing what they've got, and so that something may have happened and outsiders may look at the events and go, well, why aren't you very happy about it? So sometimes people don't just naturally react how a lot of us think they ought to. I don't know if they're chronically depressed or if they're just negative Nancys or whatever. And so I think more what they were getting at is if you're not just naturally falling into feeling thankful for it, that sometimes you got to kind of trick your own brain.
You
got to
hunt
for
it sometimes.
Yeah. I think that was more what they were getting at.
Okay.
You know,
yeah, I would not disagree
sometimes
with that.
It doesn't naturally come to some people, especially if they are dwellers. You know, they just want to be negative all the time, or, you know, sometimes you have to play tricks with your own brain to make it stop. So.
Yeah, and that's
a
skill
set
I can teach people, you know, because I get those in my practice occasionally, and I'll go, wait a minute. You know, and I find that if I start pointing things out to them and they're interested in growing, they start making connections. The neural network starts kicking and they go, oh, and it kind of sets them on a path to be a little more positive and a little less negative.
Excellent. I will actually also insert here. Last time we had briefly mentioned something that's going to come later tonight. We didn't get to it last time, and that was the Gratitude Project, and you hadn't heard of it. And what I wanted to bring up while we're talking about that real quick is that the Gratitude Project was designed by people to feed into that it was a deliberate act of doing that for a set amount of time. There's a structure. And
oh, cool.
You spend time reframing stuff. And, you know, there are different kinds and iterations of it. Some of them have a lot of rules, and some of them are like, whatever answer you want to put is fine. We're not, you know, I'm not your mom. You put whatever. But that
right.
was the point of the Gratitude Project, and that's why it's very popular in social media and pop culture. It's been a way for lay people without a lot of experience or who are not very self-aware to access that space. And
cool.
I do have a section later on where I'll talk about it in more detail. But I remember you saying that you hadn't heard of it. So since you mentioned that
right.
comment, I wanted to point out that was the genesis of that whole behavior. Was
okay,
exactly.
Cool.
All righty. Section 3, difficulty with thankfulness. So while there are myriad health and mental health benefits to thankfulness, it's not an automatic habit. Speaking of which, and it can be difficult for some people to start or express, never mind maintain for any long period of time. And by that, I mean start being thankful, you know, realizing their gratitude. So let's talk about some of the struggles or problems around, quote, thankfulness. And now here was another group question that I had. I asked them what hasn't been talked about much or enough about thankfulness. And I got three answers to this one. The first was that while we can feel thankful or not, I believe that ultimately it's a choice. The second answer was, I think that lately, at least in my world, there is so much energy spent on politics and COVID that we have lost track of gratitude. Don't get me wrong, there are a lot of things wrong in the world, but individually there are things that are a part of our lives that if we take a moment to think about it, we may be able to find gratitude in our own health, job status, housing, family members, etc. And the last one was, it had a couple. The first one was alarm or threat response fatigue. I know that one very well because I have hypervigilance problems, as you well know. And the second was reasons to be thankful for spending this time with loved ones while acknowledging that it may have pushed your relationship and communication skills to the limit. And I definitely get that. And I'm going to stop real quick and see if Dr. Mathis wants to address that because these are kind of different enough where I think I want to not try to stack too many topics on you at one time.
Okay. The first thing that came to my mind when you were talking about this was a lyric that I love that I quote a lot to my patients, which everyone has choice when to and not to raise your voices. It's you that decides. And for those who don't know, that's from a song called Run in the Mill off of All Things Must Pass, George Harrison. And I believe it's the same for thankfulness. We have a choice. We can choose to focus on negative things, or we can choose to focus on positive things. And that doesn't mean you're obfuscating the negative things. That doesn't mean you're denying when real pain and hurt and trauma exist in your life. It's rising above it. It's getting beyond it. It's coping with it and looking at resources you have to cope with it. Beyond that kind of thing, the average Joe or Jolene who just tends to focus more on negative stuff and, you know, I think part of it, and I think the person that talked about the COVID thing and the politics is absolutely right. And this is yet another reason why I never watch the news, listen to the news, read about the news, go to public social media sites ever, because I don't want to see the stupid crap that people do to each other in the world and develop an attitude of my own. So
yeah.
in this regard, ignorance on my part is bliss. I don't have to listen to all that foolishness. And I just go, you know what? There's dumb stuff in the world. There's not good stuff in the world. I recognize and acknowledge that. I'm just not going to be a part of it, and I'm not going to involve myself in it. I'm going to rise above it. And part of that is just, you know, choosing not to get involved in that crap. Because ultimately, there's not a damn thing I can do about it. right? The only thing I can do is vote my conscience and let the chips fall where they may, because whoever's going to do stupid and unethical and weird and crazy and bad stuff is going to do those things irrespective of my opinions or my outlook. So it's a wasted energy for me to spend time worrying about it or being pissed off about it or whatever.
Yeah. And besides, you have me as a filter. If you really, really needed to know something, I could just email you.
That is, yeah, you and Mr. Happy are my news sources.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we can filter out the stuff that's not even going to be useful. So it's all good.
Yeah. That's me being thankful for smart friends.
Yes. No kidding. All right.
I'm telling you. I joke about it, but I'm a sis.
It's funny because it's true.
It's I know. That's
true.
That's why it's funny. Yeah.
Yep. All right. So the next question that I asked the group was, why should we be thankful for what we have? Are we, quote, bad people if we're not feeling it? And I got several answers to this one. I may have hit a nerve, possibly. But that's okay. You know, we want to take a look at these things because people are thinking about this stuff, and I want it to be normal to talk about it and be honest about it. So that's fine.
Yeah, you can bet your bippy that if you hit a nerve with the people you interviewed, some of the listeners are going to have a nerve being hit too. So it's might as well, let's get them out and put the balm on the nerves and learn how to soothe them. Yeah.
Yep. And that's part of why I didn't name names who said what, because I don't want people to feel put on the spot for what they said.
Sure.
So they were kind enough to be honest with me. Okay,
yep,
so the first one I got was, they said, pardon me, I have the hiccups. They said, I'm grateful for what I have as it gives me a reference point for moving forward. That's tied tightly into my inherent optimism. And this person does tend to be glass half full about a lot of things. The next one that I got is, we are absolutely not bad people if we're not feeling it. One thing we can do is to direct our attention away from things we are, quote, supposed to feel thankful for but just can't for any number of reasons, and try thinking of the things for which gratitude comes easily. I like this one.
Yeah, good
we
move.
Have no ob-
good move.
Yeah, we have no obligation to offer thanks for things we never wanted, or for people who have hurt us. Yeah, I really like that. That's a good way to start. If you're stuck, start with the parts that do come easy. And you know,
yep.
Nobody's watching to see if you did the really easy questions first. It's okay. Nobody's looking.
Yep.
All right, the next one. You know, are we bad people? And their answer was not at all. But if we're not feeling it, again, we can make a choice to direct our thoughts, and eventually our feelings will catch up. And I do think for the most part that does tend to work. It doesn't always work, but a lot of the time it does help.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. That's based on good cognitive behavioral data. Yes, that's true.
Yes, yes, yes. One of the next ones was, as I said in the definitions, remember last episode we were defining like thankfulness and appreciation and blessings and all that kind of stuff. And so as they said in the definitions, thankfulness is a feeling. I don't think someone is bad if they do not feel thankful. Feelings get to operate on their terms while we humans get to go along for that ride. I do think that if thankfulness is absent for a while in a person's life, it's a good idea to spend some time in gratitude thought to maybe help generate the positive feelings. And I do think that has some merit. I think moods can come and go and things happen to you and you have a mood about it for a while. But if you're really having a long period of time where nothing makes you feel thankful, you got to do something. You know, whatever your support system is, you got to go poke it and do something with that. The next one was, I think this is such a personal journey that it can't be treated like a prescription, and that's valid also. When someone is ready, they will practice gratitude if it is right for them. No one is bad for not feeling it. I don't think I was bad during the time before I discovered that book. They were referring to a book that helped them that we talked about last time. But when I was ready, I recognized its value and gave it a try. And the last comment was, we should be thankful for what we have because our thoughts become our feelings. Feelings become our behaviors. And I do think that's true. What we feed our emotional selves is what we'll get back and what we have to give. Second thought, same person. We are likely not bad people if we're not thankful. However, we may be unhappy people if we're not able to access thankfulness. Also, IMO, in my opinion, when we are unable or unwilling to access thankfulness and other positive emotions, we're more likely to, quote, keep others down and contribute to the zero-sum game. For example, behaviors like that, anti-student loan forgiveness, anti-affirmative action, et cetera. The zero-sum game is used a lot in coaching and personal training classes. I don't know if you have heard of it, Dr. Mathis. I'm sure you're familiar with the principle, but it's an exercise in which, okay, so the participants, and I'll explain it briefly for the listeners, the participants do a workshop, and the exercise is that you're divided into teams, usually two teams, and one team is over there, the other team is in a different room, and you send representatives back and forth, and you try to negotiate, but you're not told that the point is when you do all the negotiations and the terms of the exercise correctly, when you do it correctly, each team has voted for the other team to win or succeed. And the point of the game is to teach both teams to vote the other one to win. And so what it means is life is not a zero-sum game. You don't have to make everyone lose for you to win. And a lot of people treat it like that until they learn to like a lot of people who are not self-aware or who tend to be selfish and not think about what others are going through tend to be the only way I'm getting ahead is by pooping on you or the people that I got, you know, ahead from. And really happiness and thankfulness and these positive emotions come easier when you realize other people don't have to be down for you to go places. And that's a zero sum game. So the less that you understand how to be thankful about stuff in your life, the more likely you are to be somebody who relies on the zero-sum game. And I do think that is a valid point. And with that, I'm going to turn to Dr. Mathis and see how you feel about it.
Well, the last person you mentioned that talks about thoughts and feelings and behaviors has obviously successfully gone through cognitive behavioral therapy because that's exactly the paradigm.
Yeah.
So woohoo to that person. Yeah, well, woohoo to that person. They've either gone through therapy or they've had therapy training because that's exactly correct. So there you go.
So definitely their coaching is showing, and that's good. So
yes,
maybe
ma'am.
That will help some other people.
Yep.
All righty. So the next question we have is, why do some people mock this process? And by that, I mean the process of being thankful. What do they likely fear, not value, or not understand? All right, and I had several answers for this one as well. First one, I think that they come from toxic backgrounds and may not yet have found their tribe of mutually supportive people. Yeah. The next one, I think the people who mock this process do not understand how powerful our minds are. Changing our thoughts, parenthetically, it takes some practice and it won't happen overnight. Well, yeah, no kidding. Sweetie.
I was a-thinking that.
Well, eventually, the thing is, a lot of people who start this process and it's the first time or it's, you know, something they haven't done a lot, they do get surprised by the fact that it doesn't happen very quickly and they get aggravated and kind of wander off because they want it to be now. You know, they're all Veruca Salt. I want it now.
This is not the Bullwinkle principle. The spirits are about to speak, right? Right.
Well, that's not how.
Or the Wentworth. It's my feelings and I want them now. It's not that.
Yeah. No. This is not an annuity of thankfulness. That's not how that works.
That's exactly right.
So, changing our thoughts will eventually lead to changing our feelings and ultimately changing us. And that was not the same person that said something similar to that earlier. So obviously this is something of a universal principle that people are realizing.
that's a good thing.
When I said earlier, you know, the hallmark and t-shirt wisdom, it's t-shirt wisdom. You know, thoughts become feelings, feelings become things that you do. And, you know, there's buttons and t-shirts with that and slogans and stuff, but those came from something that's a real psychological principle. And
yep.
It's a thing. This is why we're poking at thankfulness, because
yep.
a lot of people, as someone else has said, there's been so much, there's been COVID crap and political crap and people around us being nastier to each other than I can't even remember. I was born several decades ago, and I don't remember people being this nasty to each other openly like this, like ever in my life. And
well, which tells you how scared they are, because that's really coming out of fear.
It absolutely is. And
yep.
so, you know, that whole thing about your actions, it totally is true. And remembering what we are thankful for might be useful in diffusing this, because yelling propaganda at people is not going to. Even honestly, with some, yelling facts at them is not working either. But if they
mm-hmm.
remember what they're grateful for, then they start to think about what would put that in danger. And then they might actually care about protecting it. It's not a guarantee, but it's just a thought. All right, next opinion that I got. I think that it can be scary to stop and really think about all the parts of your life and figure out what is positive and what is difficult. With that, when someone is not willing or able to stop and take stock of their own life, they're more likely to make fun of someone who is successful with the process. I do think that's true. That's kind of a big bully thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a behavior we learned as children, to pick on that which we don't understand. And it carries over and plays out in adulthood from time to time. That's very timely. We were just saying stuff like that. All right, next one. If they don't feel the need to do this kind of work, it might make them feel uncomfortable. Although they could just have a neutral reaction, actual mocking would suggest to me that not only do they not want to do this practice, they don't want to see other people do it either. And that's a very interesting take on it. Because if
mm-hmm.
other people do it, they might start being thankful. And then they might get to have things that not thankful people don't usually get. So that's something to chew on. It's very interesting. All right, last comment was, I believe one of the many things that could be going on is that conjuring thankfulness can be work. And some folks are not yet comfortable with the research showing how responsible we are for our happiness. Who do we blame for our misery if this is true? And here I will pause and check in with you, Dr. Mathis, for commentary.
Yeah, all I'm going to say is I think all of these folks have very valid points to make. I think it's probably a combination of all of the above.
I would be inclined to agree with you, and I really enjoy the fact that there's a wide variety of people who responded, from people that have no training or anything like this, all the way up to people who, avocationally and a couple even somewhat professionally, do trainings or coachings or things that are related to this. So they do have some experience workshopping this kind of stuff intentionally. And it's really great. And the wonderful thing about it is they're from a lot of different backgrounds, but essentially they're saying the same things, which makes me feel better that there does
mm-hmm.
seem to be some consistent understanding of how this works, and that's really good. So I hope that helps people. All right. Next question that we put to them. Is thankfulness a lot different this year than as usual due to the extreme events of 2020? All right, let's see how many answers. Oh, we got a lot of answers for this one, too. That's fine. That's great. Okay, first answer, yes, as I'm thankful that as difficult as things are, I and those I know are yet safe. There's some people who can't say that, so I definitely can see how that's huge for you. All right, next answer was, the tragedy we see everywhere this year makes what we do have feel more precious, but it can be hard to see that. So it's more challenging, but more necessary too. I think that's valid. The next comment, and this one's a little bit long. I think it's more important than ever right now. It's too easy to only see all the negative in this time of sickness, death, restrictions, and not being able to see our friends and people we love the way that we're used to. Also, all the negative of the current election season and the division it's brought to the country. We all need more than ever, I think, to deliberately look at things, to deliberately look for things to be thankful for and choose to be thankful for them, whether we feel it or not. Say it out loud to yourself even. Quote, I'm thankful that I was able to enjoy some fresh air in the sunshine today, end quote. And or keep a gratitude journal. And that was very similar to the gratitude project, which we'll talk about in a minute. Doing this consistently may even change pathways in our brains that make us more prone to positivity when we were once prone to negativity. It worked with me at any rate. And although it took a little while, my feelings eventually caught up with all my choices. Next comment. I think it's a harder feeling to be in touch with. We're so barraged by large negative news and events that positive feelings are just harder to find. I think for those that are willing to put in the effort, thankfulness will be there, but this year it's just going to be tougher. Next answer. In a year like 2020, when so much has been absolutely catastrophic, remembering to be thankful for the good things feels grounding. But there's a trick to being thankful. I think it's in knowing where genuine gratitude stops and bragging and comparisons to others begin. Next answer. For me, it is even more necessary. The more strife there is in the world, the more I need to keep up my energy and spirits for whatever is ahead. And the next answer, I don't know yet. I think it should be, but I fear that it won't be. And here I will pause and let you jump in, Dr. Mathis. And that's the end of the section. So anything that you want to get into with that is
good. No, I think a lot of these folks, most of these folks are right on the money. It takes practice. It takes work. It takes effort. It's not going to happen overnight, but it is absolutely doable. And once you start changing your thought patterns, you do change neural pathways in the brain, which then result in better emotions, which result in better behaviors and in better physical and mental health. So it is a no-lose proposition for folks to do that.
I would definitely agree with you. I think that a lot of these guys have really hit it right on the money.
Definitely.
All righty. So the last part we want to talk about, we've got about 6 minutes till the top of the hour, so that's good, are resources to foster thankfulness. The first part here, the source is Harvard Health Publishing. This is from June 2019. Well, it was amended then. It was originally published in November 2011, and this was Ways to Cultivate Gratitude. We've talked about several of these before, but just to get them all in one place and remind you guys. First, write a thank you note. Make a habit of sending at least one gratitude letter a month. Once in a while, write one to yourself. Second, thank someone mentally. No time to write. It may help just to think about someone who has done something nice for you and mentally thank that individual. Next, keep a gratitude journal. Make it a habit to write down or share with a loved one thoughts about the gifts that you received each day. Next, count your blessings. Pick a time every week to sit down and write about your blessings. Reflect on what went right or what you are grateful for. Sometimes it helps to pick a number, such as 3 to 5 things that you will identify each week. Next, pray. People who are religious can use prayer to cultivate gratitude. And parenthetically, this is what the source says. I think if you are not a religious person, then moments of reflection can give you the same basic effect without it being about a deity. You know, that prayer evokes something that can come out in other ways, just so that you guys don't get the wrong impression about that. And the last one is meditate. Mindfulness meditation involves focusing on the present moment without judgment. Although people often focus on a word or phrase, such as peace, it's also possible to focus on what you're grateful for. Next part, the gratitude project. And I know that some of you guys are like, the what? So, it is near impossible to determine who or what was the first and original iteration of the Gratitude Project. There have been workshops and books with this and similar titles for many decades. It's a fairly universal practice and concept. When I earlier, last time, and a couple times in other shows, made reference to it concerning the show topic, my introduction to the concept, myself personally, was a social media exercise put together by a friend of a friend, who, by the way, I later actually met on Facebook a decade after this started. So back in 2004, on an old blogging website called LiveJournal, it was, you know, way before Facebook and actually before MySpace, I believe, or at the same time. So this was an exercise that started there, and people just started copying it and doing it along with her. So it was a daily gratitude exercise to share one thing each day, starting August 1st, which was the pagan holiday Lammas or Lunasa, until Mabon or fall equinox in mid-late September. Basically, it's the beginning and end of the harvest season. You know, it corresponds roughly to fall, kind of. It was to focus on blessings during the harvest season because you're thinking about the bounty that you're gathering up. That's where all that comes from. You were supposed to blog or journal one blessing every day, and you could repeat a source, but not an actual blessing. For example, you could appreciate your child or your spouse, but not for the same quality or action more than once a season. The exercise went viral and has been picked up by hundreds, if not thousands, of people by now, and even embraced by some more formal entities, such as the Unitarian Church. I know that some pagan friends of mine who are associated with a local Unitarian church had a little graphic with each of the days on the calendar so you know, like, something that they're journaling about to be grateful for, you know, such as family or accomplishment or something. Like, they would have a word to meditate on and write about it. So a lot of places have started picking this up as a way for people to focus. All right, so next question. And remember, we're in the section where we're looking for ways to help you guys do thankfulness. So my question to the group was, do exercises, quizzes, or memes, such as the Gratitude Project, help you much with gratitude? What would you add or change to get more value out of that process? And I did have several answers for that too, but we're almost done. All right, first answer, it was short and sweet. No, I'm mindful enough without such. Number two, I'm not familiar with the Gratitude Project, but I certainly get great benefit from listing and sharing things I feel grateful for. I do long lists privately in my journal, and I think they mean paper journal, not online, and share small lists with friends on social media. The person that actually said that does often post on social media to say three things you're grateful for today. And that really didn't have a deadline. It's just an informal exercise. And you don't always get the same people answering, but it's kind of nice because it's a short list. And if you miss it for a few days, no one's checking on you, so it's okay. But it's kind of nice just as a steady, regular reminder to stop for a minute and think about stuff you're glad for. And it could be stuff like, I'm really glad for iced tea mix so I don't have to sit and do all the work, you know. Those kinds of gratitudes, sometimes that's all you got one day. And it's helpful to be able to have that so you at least have something. Okay, next answer. For the first year or so after my ex-husband and I split up, I cried daily. But after a couple of months, I started a gratitude journal. My goal was to list 3 to 5 things every day I was thankful for. They had to be specific and no repeats. For example, saying, I'm thankful for my son wasn't permitted. Rather, saying, I'm thankful son's name texted just to tell me he was thinking of me and that he loves me today. Some days I was hard-pressed to write anything, but I wouldn't go to bed until I list at least one thing. Over the course of a little more than a year, I actually began to change. I was more positive. The good things stood out to me over the negative things. I started looking for things to be thankful for in every situation I found myself in. The day I experienced feeling joy again for the very first time in a long time was so special, I cried tears of happiness. It wasn't magic and it took work and consistency, but it helped me heal and changed me into a more positive person in general. Next answer. I'm not familiar with the Gratitude Project. From what little I saw in a brief search online, it looks interesting but not geared towards me. I love when quizzes and memes find their way onto my Facebook wall. I always take the time to read, reflect, do the quiz, etc. It's a casual yet structured way for me to express gratitude. Next answer. Just knowing about the book got me started. Again, this was referenced last episode. And I've never gotten into the readings to get more information. I don't do any exercises, quizzes, memes, etc., but I'm pretty content with a practice that is not constant, but is consistent. I think it is now the background to all of my other reactions to things. Next answer. My biggest thought on this is pretty simple, although I'm not sure if I can express it coherently right now, kind of super tired. I don't think you can ask people to find something to be grateful for every day. Life is hard right now, and for some people I know, keeping going is as much of an emotional commitment as they can make. But I think if you encourage people to look for it every day for a period of time, like a month, it can be a lot more helpful. Some days, the hardest days, you might not find anything for gratitude, and that can be discouraging. But after a few days of looking, it's likely that you will find something. And the more you look, the more it can help. For folks who are at their lowest points, the possibility of the next day will be better can be a lot better than a responsibility you're supposed to be able to do every day but just can't. And the last answer was, I'm not familiar with these, but I do believe that exercises are useful. All right, not related to the question. Other exercises one could try to express thankfulness are a gratitude jar that can be for yourself or to give to someone. That's where you put things that you're thankful for into a jar, and I guess when it's full, you can pull them out and read them, or you can give it to somebody, whatever. You know, people do different things with it. A vision board about someone or something that you're thankful for. Real quick, for those of you who don't know, a vision board is that thing where people cut up the magazines or print out stuff from the computer and they get a piece of poster board and they kind of tape it all up there like a ransom note with pictures. And it's supposed to be about a theme or topic or whatever. Sometimes, you know, their vision for their life or kind of what they're about, what their personality is about. Or it can be something specific like my career or, you know, my relationship or something. You know, they have different purposes, but that's what a vision board is. A gratitude tree, and I had a hard time figuring out what that one was, but that was mentioned in the article. I don't know if they mean like a little tree on a table where you put up notes. I wasn't clear on that, and I couldn't really find anything online, but that's what they said. By the way, if anybody knows where the hell a gratitude tree is, please message me on Facebook. Let me know. All right. And the last one they suggested is gratitude prompts or other forms of journaling. And it doesn't have to be journaling in the conventional sense. It can be answering social media quizzes or doing a blog or, you know, writing it wherever you want. You know, there's websites where you can just do this anonymously or whatever. Just any form of, it's the act of thinking about it and meditating for a second on it and recording it. And that's really all that really matters. So, you know, I'm going to stop here and check in with Dr. Mathis and see if there's anything else that you would like to add.
No, I just wanted to say, and with no pun intended, thanks for everybody for your input and for taking the time to think about these in a responsible way and give your own opinions on it, because that helps, you know, us with our program, and that's really cool.
Yeah, I very much appreciate those of you who weighed in, because these answers are very heartfelt, and even though they're coming from all different kinds of people, most of you said nearly identical things, and I think that will help other people who are struggling to feel thankful for stuff. They can kind of see a Venn diagram of how this works. I think you guys have really helped other people out, so thank you for that. All right, so in summary, we hope now that our listeners can better understand the concept of thankfulness and can seek to use it to enhance their lives. Most people are likely to find that deliberately choosing and fostering thankfulness helps them to find concrete value in their lives and daily pursuits. So this concludes our show on thankfulness, part two. Is there anything else that you would like to add before we close up, Dr. Mathis?
No, I would just like to say that any of you who are struggling, keep up the fight. It's worth it. You will get better at the practice of thankfulness, and you will feel better, and you'll be, no pun intended, thanking yourself for the effort.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so on behalf of myself, Dr. Mathis, and NDB Media, we want to thank our listeners this evening and give our appreciation to those of you who may be joining us later via podcast, iTunes, etc. So we will see you guys in 2 weeks with a new topic for discussion on Wednesday, December 23rd at 11 p.m. Eastern Time right here on blogtalkradio.com. We'd also like to give a shout-out to other NDB Media shows coming up in the next couple of weeks. At this time, and it may be because of the holidays, I don't have updates on specific shows as of tonight, but generally keep an eye and ear out for the following fellow shows on NDB Media. Usually tomorrow night, Thursdays, Travel It's Radio, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, with Dan Schlossberg and Mary Ellen Nugent Lee. Saturday mornings is Sports Talk with the Guys, Saturday Morning Extravaganza, 9 a.m. Eastern Time. The Monday Morning Quarterbacks are live on Saturday morning. Usually Sundays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time, The Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead, and World Beyond online viewing party that I run. Those shows have completed their seasons for the moment. We are slated to resume in February 2021. So stay tuned. We may have some possible one-time special presentations until then, such as the Walker Vocabulary Primer. I've been working on a document with one of my big, big helpers, Joan, on the other show. We have found over 150 different terms within the genre for walkers. And this is between the three TV shows, the video games, the web series, and the comics. And we're documenting them all, alphabetizing the list. And then when we get that completed, I may do a show just to read those to you guys, because it's kind of fun to see all the different words that they've come up with. It's interesting, because when people have crises and things going on in their lives, it's interesting to see what they do with it. And I know maybe that's a little morbid, but that's kind of how I run. I like my eschatological stories, so whatever. But anyhow, normally I have Walking Dead stuff Sunday nights. We're on hiatus until February, and I'll let you guys know if we do anything in between. Monday nights, 10 p.m., Monday Night in America, Roger D. Noriega brings you his unique take on politics, current events, entertainment, sci-fi, and history. This show may alternate on some Monday nights with his new show, The Nightmare Hunter with Roger D. Noriega, in the same time slot. Tuesday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern Time, Fandom Access Week in Review. Join the ingenious insights of Jamie, Karen, and AJ as they digest another night of TV. We will also have some specials for you, including Jeff Trek with Jeff Ferguson, political coverage and commentary as major events happen, including an inauguration special at 8:30 p.m. January 20th, 2021, and more. Please look for The Rock and Roll Shrink on Facebook, on Twitter, on iTunes, and on the web at www.rockandrollshrink.com. We appreciate you joining us. Thank you. We will see you in 2 weeks. And rock on. Good night.